You're listening to Press Row on Chattanooga's sports leader, ESPN 105.1 The Zone and ESPNChattanooga.com.
Welcome back into Press Row here in the Home Rate Mortgage Studios at ESPN 105.1 The Zone. David Pascal along with Jay Greason, Wells Guthrie producing the show. Hoping everybody out there is having a safe and fantastic Friday. Who's the real deal in sports right now? Tom Brady, Serena Williams, Kevin Durant? While you debate that, try the real deal at Hardee's. For only $4, you can get a double cheeseburger, spicy chicken sandwich, small fries, and a 16-ounce Coke. All of that for $4. The real deal from Hardee's, which sponsors our hotline here on Press Row at 648-1051. And it is a pleasure to welcome in on the Hardee's hotline, Joe Gagliano, who was involved in the Arizona State basketball point-shaving scandal during the 1990s. He's written about that in a book called No Gray Areas. Joe, thank you so much for joining us here on Press Row. How are you today?
You know, I'm doing great. Thanks for taking the time. I appreciate it.
No problem. I mean, we've got like a 10-minute segment. We'd love to spend 10 hours with you in a Cliff Notes kind of version. How did you first get involved with that situation at Arizona State?
Boy, you know, long story. I don't know if 10 minutes is going to cover it, but I'll try to condense it as best as I can. You know, I was at the Board of Trade in Chicago trading bond futures on the trading floor. And, you know, we are all products of our environment in some way or another. You know, the environment that I was in at the young age of 21, 22, 23 was one that kind of embraced the gray areas. To say honest, ethical trader is an oxymoron in my mind. So to be a successful trader down there on the floor, you embrace the gray areas. And those were guys that were successful that I looked up to and were my quote-unquote mentors early on in life. And so I say that, and I preface the whole ASU thing because I was kind of acknowledging gray areas at that point. Not that my moral compass was not absolute, but those were gray areas that I viewed acceptable. So my brother was at ASU, was a sophomore at ASU, and I'd go out to Tempe every now and then to visit him for college, and I was making a few bucks on the floor, and so every time I went out there, those kids on college were treated pretty well. And you know, just so happened my brother lived next door to a bookmaker on campus. And the bookmaker had a small college gambling operation. And one of his players was Headache Smith, the leading scorer and stud for the team at that point. And they had Bill Frieder was the coach. And one thing led to another. Headache Smith ran up a gambling debt. And Benny proposed to him about paying off the gambling debt by fixing a few games, and Benny made the phone call to me, the fateful phone call to me back in Chicago in 1993, and I had a few bucks, and I financed and orchestrated the whole thing.
Wow. I'm an Auburn graduate, and I know that there was a situation at Auburn 4 years ago where they looked into a player for point shaving. Here we are, Joe, just a couple of days away from a Super Bowl. Could there ever be something to in that kind of magnitude, that big of a game, where something like that could happen?
Boy, my gut on it is it's so flippant impossible to fix a team sport in today's game. You know, you look at the situation that I had, and ASU is still the largest point-shaving scandal in history, and I say that not in a braggadocious way. I say it in a factual way, but the situation was just so right at that point. When you look at a guard like Headache Smith that dictated the entire tempo for the floor, dictated the entire tempo for the team, led the NCAA in minutes played, led the NCAA in free throws and three-point percentages, and Pac-10, at that time it was the Pac-10 player of the year in defense, and just controlled that entire team, control where the ball went and everything else like that. And you don't have situations like that much anymore. And in the college game, you got these kids that are just so dominant leaving the schools after a year or two. In the NFL, it would be next to impossible to throw a game. You'd have to have a quarterback in some capacity that would either throw some picks or do something crazy, but how long would he stay in the game? And these guys are paid some ungodly amounts of money. So how are you going to entice them to do it? you can't really fix a college football game. It's going to be extremely difficult because coaches are going to yank you and pull you. I think, you know, in retrospect, not that I would ever look to fix any type of sporting event again, but if I were, there are a couple low-hanging pieces of fruit, and I think a goalie for a hockey team, you get a goalie that's in the twilight of his career, a couple years left in his career, making a few $100,000 a year. You get him, and you pick a game on a Saturday or Sunday that's higher profile. You let him put 3-4 goals through the wickets in the first period, and you bet the over. You could probably get $5 to $10 million off on that game and not raise too many flags, but that might be one way to do it. You might be able to get a major league pitcher that's, you know, second, third tier on the roster that can throw some cheese down the middle in the first or second inning and bet the over on that game. You know, you can get a UFC fighter. These kids don't make any money in the UFC, but yet there's a betting line on them. You can get a tennis player that those guys aren't making any money, but yet there's a betting line on them. So those are the situations where personal performance can certainly dictate some greed, and there's a betting line on them.
You're listening to Joe Gagliano, whose book No Gray Areas details his involvement with the Arizona State basketball point shaving incidents back in the 1990s. You're listening to Joe here on Press Row on ESPN 105.1 The Zone.
Joe, at the time, how much were you gambling?
You know, being on the floor of a trading floor, you know, 90% of those guys got two types of vices in their life, either drugs or gambling. Me, I never did a drug in my life, but on the trading floor, I certainly learned how to gamble. So, hey, anytime you're in the markets, it's a gamble.
You know,
because there's a winner and there's a loser, no matter what you do. So it's the same thing. I mean, I've been gambling my whole life, basically. I still trade in the markets, and I still pick games.
Who you like Sunday?
It's a tough game. It's a tough game to break down, but if I had to pick a side right now, I'd pick the under. I think that total is just so propped up. I think it's all the public hype with Atlanta putting up 40 points plus against Green Bay and with New England putting up 36 points against Pittsburgh. But I don't think Atlanta's has ever seen a defense like New England. And I think they're going to shut them down in the mid-20s, and I think it's going to go under the total of 60.
Most you ever lost on a sporting event?
Oh, gosh. Well, the last ASU game. the last ASU game was about $5 million. That was painful. But you know, there's been some good wins though. There's been some real good wins. I'll never forget. I had Evander Holyfield against Riddick Bowe on that fight where the fan man came into the ring, and I had Evander Holyfield pretty large, and Evander was getting the brains beat out of him, and fan man came in the ring there from the parachute and in about the seventh round, and it was an October day back in Vegas, and Evander's corner ended up putting a jacket on him. Riddick Bowe's corner didn't have a jacket, and after a 30-minute delay, Evander ended up winning. So that was a good fight. That was a good day.
Can I share something with you?
Sure.
I lost a bunch of money on that exact fight. I remember every detail.
Every detail,
yes. How much do you have to put on, whether it's a golf swing, whether it's on the floor at the market in Chicago, whether it's on a baseball game at Wrigley? How much do you have on a game to feel the juice?
Boy, you know, that's a really good question. I just had that conversation with a couple buddies of mine last weekend. I was in Las Vegas. For me to watch a game, gosh, I got to have some dollars. I'm a sports fan. I hang around. I got some really dear friend of mine, really dear friends that are retired athletes, and I'm a quasi wannabe athlete, but I got a 4-inch vertical, you know.
Right.
But I got to have some dollars on the game. It's got to be a few $1,000 for me to actually want to make a bet and actually want to try to grade the game and dissect the game.
You're listening to Joe Gagliano, whose book No Gray Areas details his involvement in the Arizona State basketball point-shaving scandal of the 1990s. In doing some research, Joe, it said you were sentenced to 15 months in prison. How long did you serve, and what was that experience like?
Well, you know, hey, prison it's not a fun place. You could say it's a camp, and you could say all this other try a cushy things to try to talk about it, but hey, you're still being taken away. Your freedoms are taken away. You're labeled a felon. And at that point in my life in 2000, when I went away, I had two daughters, and which were at the age, at that point, 4 and 5. So it sucks, guys. I have no other way to say it. I was in the best of the worst, I could tell you that much. It wasn't like I was, you know, in a 3x5 cell at that point in my life, but it still, it sucked. And I ended up doing at that, I ended up doing 12 or 12 and a half months at that point. But hey, it's something that you definitely learn from, and the old cliche, what doesn't kill you makes you stronger, certainly applies.
And talk about your book, talk about No Gray Areas. Does it start from the very beginning? Kind of like the very first question we asked you at the top of this interview, talk about the book.
Well, the book itself is about 24 chapters. It's been very well reviewed. We're doing a movie right now. The movie's in the works of finalizing the contract. But the book, I mean, guys, it was a struggle for me to write it. It was a struggle for me to write it because I turned down so many flipping offers, whether 2000, 2001, 02, Movies of the Week, Random Publishing House, Newsweek, Sports Illustrated. They were all throwing me crazy, crazy dollars at the time, and I just never wanted to glamorize it. I never wanted to put my family through that embarrassment again. But what happened was, in 2012, I got indicted again for something. I tell you straight up, I don't even know what the heck I did, other than having the label on me from the ASU thing, 20 years earlier. So I got indicted, and I had to plead. I got indicted on 6 counts of bank fraud, and I'm telling you guys straight up, if I went to trial, I would have beat 5 out of 6 counts 8 days a week. The one count, where I signed off on the document to the bank was 50-50 at best. But because I had the prior, if I would have taken it to trial and I would have lost, I was looking at a mandatory minimum of 10 years. So I took a plea deal, and I took a 30-month plea deal back in 2012. And so when I was in that prison cell, the second time was a heck of a lot harder than the first time. When I was in that prison cell, I typed out the book, and I typed it not to in hopes of making money or sensationalize it. I typed it just for my kids. I wanted my 4 kids to understand the journey that I went on, and to understand that every choice we make has a consequence behind it. And so I sent it out to my kids, and I sent it out to a circle of friends that I trust explicitly, and they said, Joe, there's a bigger story here. There's a bigger story that people can learn life lessons from, that they can learn from your crazy journey, that every choice does have a consequence. And, it's just worked out really, really well. I'm talking to a lot of kids and talking to a lot of impressionable athletes and just using it as a platform to try to help others.
Joe, this has been every bit as fascinating as we thought it would be, and then some. I got to ask you, final question, where do you go from here?
Where do I go from here? I'm a man of extreme faith. I'm a serial entrepreneur. I've been blessed with a mind that works. I've been blessed with health. I got a beautiful wife. I've got loving kids. I mean, it's the world is endless for me. I could sit here and bitch and moan about, oh my God, I'm a 2-time felon. I could sit here and bitch and moan about some of the speed bumps I've hit in life, but man, I'm just blessed. 90% of the world, in spite of my problems, 90% of the world would love to have my problems.
Now, who's playing you in the movie, Joe?
I don't know. That's all up to the studios to figure out. The only thing I've, kind of been arm wrestling with them about is the integrity of the story. The integrity of the story is what's important to me. So, who they cast is indifferent to me. Hopefully he's a good-looking kid.
Right.
So
well,
maybe that'll work.
And you realize that it's you, it's Henry Hill, and it's Abe Rothstein are the 3 biggest gambling fixtures of all time.
I don't know if that's a compliment or a curse. I don't know what that is, but I appreciate you saying that.
Joe, listen, thank you so much. Best wishes on success of No Gray Areas, and best wishes for the future. Thank you so much for coming on here in Chattanooga on Press Row and sharing your story.
Hey, guys, I appreciate the time. Anything I could do moving forward, let me know.
Sounds great. Joe Gagliano here on Press Row. We'll reopen the Hardee's hotline, 648-1051. This is Press Row here on ESPN 105.1 The Zone.